All right, man, let's kind of get into it, Casey. You know, one of the main things that I think we should really start off with, and I'm just going to throw some questions at you and let you answer them, because one of the questions I seem to always get is, you know, what do my resources look like? How many leads am I taking on a weekly basis? How does that really shape up? Is it bonus leads, A leads? What do the numbers look like? And from there, maybe we can kind of move into what the schedule looks like. But, Casey, on a weekly basis, and let me start off before even going to resources, how big is your territory? How far will you go in any direction to go run appointments?
Well, you know, right now it's about an hour to an hour and a half, probably something like that. Yesterday, Tuesday, I was in the field, and I did about $5,000 yesterday, and it was about, I was spread, I was in Haywood County, I was in Buncombe County, I was in Henderson County, and I was in Transylvania. I was in four counties yesterday. So it's not too far away. It's just that I put some miles on the car because I was you know, in four different counties. It's just, most of the time it's like two different counties, but yeah,
so
was a little bit spread out.
Just so everybody understands that, you went 30 miles west, then you went 30 miles south, and then you went from there 30 miles southwest. And so you kind of, you know, it just gives you an idea of how much you're going. So a lot of people kind of want to stay within X amount of radius. You can do it, but why would you if you can go right $5,000 in a Tuesday, much less $15,000 in a Tuesday? So that's kind of what you're, and you know what? I think it's important to say, too, that when we started this company, there weren't leads in Haywood County, Transylvania County, Buncombe County, Henderson County. You were going all the way down to Charleston, which was how far, about 4 hours?
It was about 4 hours, and Brandon, it was at least 60 days. It was 2 months before I ever worked an A-lead with Symmetry Financial Group that was pumped out, you know, through our mailhouse. I mean, there was some, again, you know, when you're starting a company, there's some trailblazing and some bumps that, you know, you and I went through, and then a lot of you guys on the phone have went through too, just because, you know, the systems aren't like we're building the company, and so there's some trailblazing that we all went through, and that was something that I went through, Brandon, was for the first 2 months I worked, you know, just older leads. They were anywhere from, you know, 3 months to 2 years old in Charleston, South Carolina, which is 4 hours away from the home. And I think it's important to understand for everybody on the phone that, you know, that Brandon, I mean, you were the top agent in the company, you know, personal producer last year for our first year in business. And, you know, I went out last month. It was 5 days. It was 5 days total last month in the field. And it was 30,000 in production. And, you know, probably maybe 6 to 8 hours on the phone, maybe 10 at the most. But so it was really maybe six total days to do 30,000 in production. But I think it's important for everybody to understand kind of where our head was at when we set the company up and why it was important for us to go in the field. Not just to show you guys that we can do it, but it was a, you know, anything, like we could go out and we can take out business loans for a couple hundred thousand and start the company. Or we can build the company, Brandon, and we can just live on the overrides from it and pay our personal bills with the overrides, but then the company suffers because we're not able to invest back in the company. So our philosophy was, we've seen what happens when a company is over-leveraged and it puts the principals in a position where they have to make bad decisions for the company and for the leadership in the company. So we didn't want to get ourselves in that mess and go out and get herself over, you know, too much exposure and all kinds of loans and interest rates and all kinds of stuff and put ourselves in a position where we had to make decisions that helped us and not so much help the company. So we didn't go that direction, and we didn't go the direction of let's set it up and just, like, because right now, Brandon, we don't necessarily need to be in the field. We could live off the overrides, but we starve the company for the investment and the reserves and the new things we're wanting to do with leads and software and all this. So it's like the reason we're in the field right now is to cover our personal stuff. Like we haven't said, we were talking, I think, John the other day, Brandon, how much have you taken from the company? We haven't really taken anything from the company. Like, everything that I've done and you've done was to pay our personal production, and we invest the overrides back into Symmetry Financial Group. And that's the way you've always done it, Brandon. Like, any overrides you made in your business, those weren't necessarily pay your bills. Those were meant to invest in the company. My personal production pays my bills. My overrides invest and help me grow the business.
Yep.
Now, some of you guys are going, yeah, but you know, I thought we were going to make more money. I thought I was going to be able to live. You are, but just delay that gratification. Keep your head down. Stay in the field. Reinvest the overrides, and you'll grow quicker. Well, I want to eat the overrides. Well, eat your seed, and you won't have nothing later. So That's kind of the philosophy. Yeah, and I just wanted to kind of mention that to everybody and help them to understand how we started it and how we expect everybody to kind of to be with it. And you can be aggressive like that. You don't have to go get a business loan to do it. I mean, go out and pay your bills with your personal production and invest the overage and the overrides that come in, and this thing grows pretty quick.
Yeah, you're exactly right, buddy.
You know, another comment that I want to make to everybody is that I'm right now on my 9,600 hours in the business. I did a little bit of a rough calculation this morning on how many hours, because there's books that say that they call it the 10,000 hour rule, and it's how long does it take you to work in a business or a career to where you become an expert, and it's about 10,000 hours. Like, how long, like, before you're an expert physician, let's say, like a doctor, how long do you have to be working in your field to where you're really kind of considered an expert, and that's about 10,000 hours. I figure maybe 25 hours a week in the field for me, 30 hours a week in the field for me for 8 years now, puts me at about 9,600 hours. So, you know, for anybody that's on the phone, that's brand new, you're struggling in the field, just understand that there's certain phases that everyone that joins our company, and not just joins Symmetry, these four phases, and I want to talk about real quick, Brandon, they affect every single one of us in our approach to business and our approach to life and our approach with relationships with other people. First, you go through the excitement phase. And Brandon, I don't know about you, but I remember that. That was the phase where, you know, it's like our whole life we're programmed that, you know, to believe that we can't do it. You know, we're always told no. And for the first time ever, you see something like, for instance, Symmetry Financial Group, and maybe you go out and you make your first set of phone calls and you get some appointments under your belt, and you start to kind of hear that little voice in your head saying, like, this is a possibility, like, this thing can work. And so the first stage that you go through, and everybody goes through it, is this excitement stage. I was talking to Ed last night, you know, in relationships they call this the honeymoon phase. This is where just everything is like glorious, like the sun's out, everything's awesome looking, and we're so excited, everything's easy. And then comes stage number two. This is the frustration stage. This is where you get frustrated. Your excitement goes away. You may start to struggle on the phone, booking appointments, or you struggle in the home. Usually self-inflicted, but it is what it is. You stop doing the things that you did in the very beginning when you were coachable and your ego is in your back pocket. You stop doing that stuff and you start trying to reinvent the wheel, and your ego gets in the way and you start not listening. And so you start to struggle. Maybe you brought a bunch of people in and half of them quit, maybe on the building side of things when you're trying to build your agency. You start to get frustrated there. But this is a vital stage that Brandon, you went through it. All of us, you know, all the kind of top producers and top builders, we all went through that frustration stage. And here's a trick about this stage: is it oftentimes comes back. It comes back sometimes because it's always a battle with egos in this business. Like, my ego gets in the way, and so I start trying to take shortcuts again. And I don't listen to this. I get some recognition, and we get back to the, you know. So the frustration stage can come back, but it is a vital stage. It's something you must go through because it's how you get better in this business. Then you go through stage number three, which is the quitting stage. and you will go through this stage as well. I've been through it. Brandon, you've been through it. If you've been in this business or any business, or again, go back to relationships, like there's a stage in which it's like it's quitting time. It's either I got to change, they got to change, we both got to change, or we're done. Same thing in business. Something's got to change or I'm out. Happened to me. Remember January 2006, went 26 appointments in a row, Brandon, sat on every single one of them and missed every single one of them. So it's kind of funny when somebody, I was talking to one of the agents this morning and I was complaining, not complaining, but just, you know, I went on 7 appointments yesterday and only sold 2 of them. I said, call me back when you missed 26 in a row. You know, but it's the quitting stage. And I was shopping around the classified ads at that point. You know, I was looking for jobs. Like I was about to quit. So it's a stage that we all go through. And so I guess somebody asked me how I did 30,000, Brandon, in a month. You know, the simple answer to that question is I just didn't quit. Like if you're the person asking me that question, you might have hit that, not you, Brandon, but somebody else, like a new producer asking me this question, like, if you don't quit, you will hit that too. You'll get that. But you have to log the hours in. You know, and there's shortcuts to it as well. You know, what books are you reading? Some of the best shortcuts I've ever had were found in books, probably shaved off a few hundred hours for me. Conference calls, you know, meetings that I plugged into. It seems easy for us now, Brandon, but it's because we've invested in ourselves, and it seems easy for guys like Ed Arell to go out and kill it in the field, or Lynn or Andy and Tina, you know, John Woodbury. It's like it seems a little bit easier for them to go out. John Woodbury did four or five grand yesterday. It's like it's kind of a little bit easy, but it's because they've went through that quitting stage. They've gotten themselves better. They've plugged in. So, the next stage that you go through, number 4, is the resolve stage. And the cool thing about the resolve stage is it gives you a reference point in your mind and your subconscious that tells you that you can go through it and make it through. If you're always quitting in whatever you do, like I set a goal to lose 10 pounds and I give up when I lose 1, I send a message. Everything I do, I send a message to my head. So if I'm always giving up, my brain, like next time it comes, next little bit of adversity I hit, it pulls reference points up. It's like a little filing cabinet in my head. And it searches through and it said, last time you hit a wall, you gave up and you quit. So that's what you're supposed to do right now. So back when I missed 26 appointments, you guys are probably tired of hearing about it, and the reason I remember it is because it's a reference point. And my brain says you missed 26, and the very next month you didn't quit, and you went out and you did $48,000 in production with your own pen. And there's a reference point there versus the reference point that said, nope, you actually found a job in the classified section, so you quit that job, and now you were making $8 an hour again. Like, so you kind of determine your reference point through this resolve stage. It's an important stage because you either quit and you get bitter, and generally what happens is when people quit and they go through this quitting stage, they either get better or they get bitter. They don't take accountability for it. They start pointing their finger at every little thing that happened in the business, and they start blaming it on you and me, Brandon, or their upline. Or you didn't tell me this, or you did this, and then they go hop around to somewhere else, and they go through these 4 stages again. It's going to happen everywhere you go, but it's important to understand that resolve stage is where you take accountability and you change. And again, when you do that, you create a reference point. So I just kind of wanted to talk about the mindset, Brandon, a little bit on that 30,000, because that's the most important part. You understand kind of the phases of the business and where the focus is, which, by the way, Brandon, my focus is on building. Mm-hmm. It's building the company, and we talked about this before, but I think it's important when your focus is on showing the plan, and when your focus is on building your business, then you're not focused. You don't have the room to focus on making the sale. So when I go to my appointments on Tuesday, Brandon, I'm not going in the home saying, I got to sell this one, I got to sell this one, I got to sell this one. I just got off the phone with, you know, two or three new people that went out the first week and, you know, and sold some, like, you know, actually made some money with us, like week one. Or I just got off the phone with one of the top leaders in the company, and I'm, you know, I'm excited about that. I'm not going to the home thinking about selling it. And just understand that when you concentrate on selling and you're thinking about selling, people don't want to be sold. So you're usually going down the wrong path there. They want to buy it. So I just, when you keep your chin up and you focus on building, the sale just usually happens. For the guys that are out there just focusing on selling, they usually struggle with it. So get your mindset right, and the $5,000 Tuesdays just kind of happen a little bit more often. Yeah, that makes sense.
So I've got a couple of questions already. And
okay, I'm sorry. I'm talking too much. Go ahead.
No, it was good. It was good. I think that's important because, you know, it's such a mental game and such an attitude game.
It really is. It's 98% mental, 2% mm-hmm. mechanical, and that's why I wanted to talk about some of the stuff I did there.
Sure. Talk to me about your resources. You know, what kind of lead flow?
Okay, I work about 10 A leads every single week. I've worked bonus leads, 4A, 2A, 1A. You got to make a mm-hmm. few more phone calls, but that's how most people get started. But at some point, you know, as a leader, I knew that I wanted to get myself some A leads in there. So I would encourage everybody that does not have a standing A lead or to talk with their growing up line and say, hey, you know, when is it going to be time to get on an A lead? They may say, well, I want to see a couple sales from you first, but man, you get these A-leads, Brent. I make, on Saturday, I pick up the phone.
Yeah, I'll get 10 question. Of them. What's your schedule?
Saturday, you know, I make my phone calls on Saturdays, just like everybody else. And what I don't book on Saturdays, I'll pick up the phone Sunday and throughout, maybe if I'm in the field Monday. I have my leads with me everywhere I go, which is another little trick. Some people say, well, like last week, I had a lot to do between Wednesday and Sunday, really. I logged about 30 or 40 hours doing some volunteer work, and I had my lead. I mean, I take my leads with me everywhere I go. So,
well, I was
no matter where I'm at, Brandon, whether I'm in the airport or I mean, I've made phone calls in the airport. I mean, you know, anywhere I can't, like if I'm in the field, my leads are always with me in the field. So if I get a no show and I don't have any door knocks close by, I'm in the car making phone calls for Tuesday.
Well,
but
I was going to say
Saturday, run Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah, I was going to say I was in town. I think I flew in like on a Sunday night, and you picked me up. This was two or three weeks ago, and we just started chatting. And I saw your leads there. I was like, what you been doing? Made dials on the way to pick me up at the airport, which was like an hour away, and I think you said you booked six appointments in
booked
your car.
Six appointments on the way to pick you up, and that was on a Sunday. I was six appointments on the way out there. This past week, I was driving out to Waynesville on Monday night. I only had one appointment Monday night this week. I was driving out to Waynesville, seeing how they could meet, but I needed to make phone calls anyways, and for some reason, I get a lot of work done in my car, a lot more sometimes than I do, you know, in the comfort of my own home or something. So I brought my leads with me. It's about a 30-minute drive out there. I had five appointments set on the way out to my one appointment in Waynesville. And then I sell that appointment, $140 a month, and I come back out. This was this Monday, and I come back home, and I got two more appointments on the way. So I had nine appointments for Tuesday.
Love it, man. Another question is, you know, how do you get that many appointments in one day? That's two Tuesdays we've talked about where you've gotten nine appointments, and I'll let you answer it.
Well, I think I stick to the script is the big thing. You know, I'll say, Brandon, you know, I got this notice in front of me here, the protection about the mortgage, you know, mortgage protection and covering in case of like a death or a disability. Do you remember where to help mm-hmm. pay your loan off, Brandon?
Yeah.
Now it says here that you're a plumber. Is that right?
That's right.
And Meredith is a stay-at-home mom.
She's a plumber's assistant.
Plumber's assistant. Okay. When do you usually work, Brandon?
You know, typically Monday to Friday, 8 to 5. I may be home sometimes as late as 6, but not any later than that.
Monday to Friday, 8 to 5, okay. Well, it takes me about, usually about 10 or 15 minutes, Brandon, just to open up my laptop and show you what your options are and see if you qualify for anything. I got about 10 homeowners in my schedule out there Monday. I got a spot open at about 5:30, and I got one at about 6:30. Which one of those would work better for you?
Better make it 6:30. So I'm gonna be sure to.
I'm gonna put you in for 6:30. You're on 123 ABC Street, right?
Left.
Just sticking to the phone script. I do give myself a little bit of a window there at the end of the phone call. Say, Brandon, give me 20 minutes either side of that, just in case I'm running a little bit behind or a little bit early. So when I usually have a little sheet of paper next to me when I'm dialing, and it has my schedule. I just make up a quick schedule so I can look at it while I'm dialing, because if I need to fit somebody in somewhere, I need to see. I can't just be flipping through all my leads trying to figure out what my day looks like. I need to see a day in a snapshot. So I just take a blown lead or an old piece of paper or a back of a leaderboard or something like that, Brandon, and I put my Tuesday on there, and then I'll start to fill it up so I can look at it while I'm talking to somebody and say, you know, I got a 3 o'clock and I got a 5 o'clock open. So, but after I get done setting the appointment, I'll make it a little bit more flexible, and I'll give myself about a 45-minute to an hour window where I could actually show up and see that person.
Yeah, I like that.
And because for the most part, when somebody says they work, you know, until 3, in my mind, I'm going, you know, because like I got 3 counties to work. In my mind, if I get the appointment set and I'm booked up pretty solid, what would be the problem in saying something like this, Brandon? I'm going to put you in at 3 o'clock, at 3:30. You're at 123 ABC Street, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I tell you what, I got. Could you guys now, when you get home, Brandon? You guys are fairly flexible. I mean, you're not leaving back out at like 3:30 or 4 or anything like that, right?
No.
Could I do this? Could I put you in? I'm going to keep you at 3, but if for some reason I show up at 4 or 4:30, the reason is that I got 4 or 5 appointments scheduled right in there in Buncombe County, and if I could kind of make it a little bit flexible for myself, that would help me out.
Sure.
I make it about being like, can you help me out? I love saying that kind of stuff. Would you help me out? Can I put you in between 2 and 4? And if I'm show up anytime, but you guys will be home, right? Like, I'm going to put you in between 2 and 4. That's if I'm starting to get booked up pretty good and I need some flexibility to say, why would I drive from Buncombe County to Henderson County when I can go ahead and get these 2 in Buncombe County and then drive to Henderson County and get this one? If I've set my schedule up on the hour every hour and I haven't given myself any wiggle room with the client, then I can't do that as much. So I like to give myself a little bit of flexibility there. That helps you set it up in one day like that.
Well, and it does. It also helps with no-shows. Because that's
and I double book too, Brian. I double book my primetime spot. So I'm going to have people to see. I mean, I just have my schedule in front of me here. Yes, I had one at 4, one at 4:30, one at 5:30, one at 6. I mean, and these people are all 15, 20, 30 minutes apart. So, you know, I always get a little bit of a carryover for the next week.
Well, I think that's important to say, too, because people want to want somebody that's busy. That's why you slip there in the phone script. You say, I got about 10 homeowners I've got to see out there. You know, what time is usually better for you? People want to do what everybody else is doing, but they also want to deal with someone that's busy. And it's a very easy phone call to call someone and say, listen, I apologize. I'm running way behind schedule. I can put you at 8 or 9 o'clock tonight, or I can just put you tomorrow at this time or Tuesday at this, whatever. I love double booking, and that answers the question, you know, how do you get that many appointments? It doesn't mean, when you say you have 9 appointments, it doesn't mean that you necessarily saw 9 people. Rarely does that happen. But I think with the way the market is right now, Casey, too, a lot of the families that we're seeing are above 60, above 70, some even above 80. As a matter of fact, last week, every one of my apps came in on people that were over the age of 70. And most of those people are retired, and you can see them at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the morning if you need to. So, all right, so we've got that. You've got the schedule down. You've got the kind of leads that you're taking. You know, I think if you're brand new, you can get similar results. You just, you know, you've got to get more activity, more bonus leads. But
yeah, you can't make $40 and get, generally, you're not going to, on bonus leads, you're not going to be able to make $40 or $50 and get, you know, 10 or 12 appointments. You're going to be, you know, you're going to have to make a couple hundred, but it's because it's law of averages. So, you know, if you're booking one appointment every $10, then do the math. If you're booking one appointment every $20, then do the math. Then don't stop until you get your 10. A minimum of 10 set appointments. Don't stop, because if you're trying to hit your $5,000, which everybody on the phone is capable of hitting $5,000, whether you're part-time or full-time, you need to hit $5,000 to pay your bills and have some excess, some overage to help fund your business. But $5,000 every week, I need at least 10 appointments, Brandon, because I don't sell every one of them.
Right. Well, you're exactly right. Pretty close last week, though, I think. So let's get into the home. So we've got really, you know, there's really two types of that you can go on, and I don't mean two types of scripts. I mean there's two types of product that you're really going to go in and write, and that's going to be mortgage protection, both of which, I guess, are mortgage protection, but you're either going to go mortgage payoff, which is your traditional home protector, you know, the ING term, the Mutual of Omaha term, America, whichever you choose. But if they are above the age of 70 or if their health is not where it needs to be, then you do the mortgage payment plan. And I think in the market today, Casey, we're starting to see a lot more of, you know, those type of leads where either they're over the age of 70 or maybe they're 30 or 40 years old, but there's a health issue there that they can't qualify for something, so you have to go the other option. So let's kind of start off with, you know, traditional mortgage protection like the payoff plan. And how are you kind of setting that up when you're in the home?
Well, you know, I think, again, going back to just our sales system is, it, you know, the fundamentals have to be there. I think the sale is made in the first, you know, 5 or 10 minutes of you being there. And you're not talking about product. You're not talking about anything. You're just talking about them. Like, I spend 10 minutes just building rapport with them. You know, that's step number one, is just when I get in the home, I know that I got to figure out a way to make them like me a little bit. You know, I can't just jump right into it, so I'm going to spend a little bit of time, and I generally just like to ask them questions about themselves, how long they've been married for, you know, how long they've lived in the home for, where they were born at, you know, what brought them to the area, you know, just 4 or 5 questions just to get them kind of talking a little bit, and people love to talk about themselves, and you know, so I just build rapport with them. I do not move on until I feel like I've got some amount of rapport built. And then I'm going to move into the emotion of it, which is the most, if you're missing sales, this is probably one of the most important, you know, questions you can ask in the home is, why did you send the form in? So when I first start, like, I'll rapport, I flip the lead over, I show it to them, and then I get some information from them because it helps me to kind of determine which direction I'm going to go. If they're younger, pretty good health.
That's part of that rapport process, too. So it's like,
it really is, part of it, you know, because I'm getting some information. And if I think of a good question to ask them, something a little bit personal, you know, something about what they do for work or how long they've been doing that for. So I'm kind of building rapport. I'm gathering some information from them. I always think of like a doctor, because, you know, think about control in an environment, especially when you're in sales. Control is an important thing. The person asking the questions is in control. The person answering the questions is not in control. The person asking the questions is selling. The person answering the questions is buying. So if you're either on the phone or in the home and you find yourself just getting all kinds of questions and all you're doing is answering them, then they're selling you on a reason why they're not going to do this. And if you're the one asking questions, so I always try to, I'm the one kind of crafting the question and drilling down a little bit, and I always think of a doctor, because that's why we trust doctors, because when we sit in front of them, they're gathering information, they're asking us the questions, we're nodding. You know, they say sales is just a matter of getting them to nod with you or laugh with you. You can do that, you're 98% of the way there. That's what I'm trying to do. And you know, how much would I trust a doctor if he came in and prescribed me some sort of serious therapy or treatment or surgery if he never even asked me a question about myself? So I gotta get some questions out there. I gotta ask him, you know, age, health, you know, what they do for work, and then most importantly, the emotional part is why they send the notice in. What do you guys want? And then I spend a little bit of time. I spent a lot of time right there just kind of drilling down, and I'll say things like, okay, Brandon, so basically it sounds like you're saying that if something were to happen to you guys, now what do you mean in case something? What does that mean for you? Is I want Brandon and Meredith to say death. I want, if I die or if I get in a car accident or if I fall off the roof, roof and break my legs and I can't work. I want them to get descriptive with it, so I'll ask the questions. I don't want to just, okay, something happens, and move on. I ask more questions than that, and then I'll look at Meredith and I'll say, Meredith, let's say something did happen to Brandon. Let's say, heaven forbid, somebody, you know, crosses a double yellow line tomorrow and Brandon doesn't come home from work. That income is not there anymore. Meredith, how tough would it be for you, and I've already got their mortgage amount and their mortgage payment because I've asked them, how tough would it be for you to make that $1,500 mortgage payment? Well, it'd be extremely tough. It would be, like, how tough would it be? What would you have? It would be, you know, practically impossible. Okay, what would you have to do to make, I don't know, I'm going to have to make it, take another job, or, like, I'm asking questions like that. Okay, now, what about you? What if something happened to Meredith tomorrow? Like, I go back and forth between them. I'm doing that to get the emotion out, but I'm also doing that to determine who would be the priority, because if there's $100 a month in the budget, maybe we want to focus on Brandon first and then Meredith versus Meredith and Brandon. So I like to ask back and forth to get the primary, the concern there, like who's the most important person to have coverage on. Let's focus on you first, and then we'll switch gears and work on Meredith. So that's kind of how I've run with the emotional part. And then everything else is, if you've done your job on the rapport and the emotion good enough, then it's just a matter of being assumptive with everything else.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in control of the process and you've asked the right questions, and you've been assumptive, they say when assumption is there, it takes away the need for a close. Like, when you're assuming the whole process, like after I get done with the reward and the emotion, Brandon, I'll say, just so you guys know what my job is I'm basically going to show you a couple options. We're, you know, I'm a broker, so we have a bunch of different options for you. I'm going to show you what I would do in this case, and we're going to fill out the application. I'm going to ask you some health questions, and we're going to send that in and see if they accept us. If they don't, I'll come back. Don't worry, we'll find you something else. Make sense?
Yeah, I think you're
so I'm already kind of like assuming.
Yeah.
Right there, Brandon, that, and again, when you assume, you don't have to close because you're closing the whole time. Like if I've assumed and I've stated what we're going to do the whole time, there never comes a point at the end of the presentation, Brandon, where you have to say, so, will it be? Like, there's never like a closing pitch line or anything like that. It's just you've assumed the whole time, so you don't have to close.
Yeah, we've always said, Casey, it's kind of when you do everything right on the front end, they like you, they trust you, you've gotten the information, you've kind of verified, you've gotten to the why, you've gotten the emotion on the table, you've explained role and purpose, which is important also, because it's kind of like telling them what you're going to do before you do it, and they're just nodding their head, right? If you do all those things the right way, it really is just a matter of price is right from there on, right? It's like as soon as the price is in the budget, it's a done deal.
You know, I saw a video of, I can't remember where it was at, something on YouTube or something. I was goofing off on that, and I saw somebody, it was like a little presentation video of their sales presentation of like how you should do it, and it was just so cheesy because the person was just being, not unprofessional, but just very like salesy and just trying to make unnecessary jokes and just being almost too friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it goes back to people hate to be sold. They know what you're doing. They want to buy it. Create a good professional atmosphere where you're in control. You know, I'm not too joking around. Too. I mean, I am. I'm being nice. I'm being friendly, but I'm not being too cheesy, if that makes sense.
Because
I always feel like if I do that, then they're going to get the idea that, like, something's in it for me. Like, to me, I'm like a $10 an hour employee. I'm just sitting there at the desk. I got to do this paperwork. I got to do it right. I take pride in what I do. I'm a professional at it, but it's like I'm not that concerned with whether or not they do it. I am, but does that make sense? It's just a little bit of a mindset, I guess. And I think you can give yourself that mindset by setting yourself up enough appointments. Because if you get yourself enough appointments, then you put your stance and your posture are right when you're in a home versus when you only got two appointments. You're scared to death. You need it. So you start being cheesy and you start trying to sell it, and that's when you get objections.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm showing the options on the mortgage payoff option, like if I'm sitting there in front of somebody that's, you know, under 50, 60 years old, and I'm starting to show them a home protector, which is kind of my go-to, that's American Amicable Home Protector, I start, Brandon, I put option A, and then I load it up. I put the full death benefit on there, I put full accidental death. I put disability. I put critical illness. And as I'm going down the line, I'm doing this on the back of the leech. I'm turning it over, and I'm kind of putting it in front of them, and I'm just drawing it out with my pen. I'll put $100,000 in case of a death, and I explain each one of those as I go. It takes a few minutes to do this, but this is where I really sell the value in the product. I explain to them what it does, and I try to be good at painting the picture. So, like, John, if you die, then Mary gets this $100,000. Like, the $100,000 would go to Mary as the beneficiary, and this is a level benefit. So I explain a couple things about the death benefit, explain the accidental death benefit. I really get descriptive about the critical illness benefit. You know, and again, it's not what it is, it's what it does. Don't just say critical illness pays $25,000 in case of a cancer, heart attack, stroke, and then move on to the disability. Like, I sell the value in it. Like, imagine, Brandon, imagine if tomorrow you woke up and had a heart attack. Like, what if I were to slide $25,000 in front of you? What could you do with that 25 grand? How many mortgage payments could you make with $25,000? Your mortgage payment's $1,000, right? How many mortgage payments could you make with 25 grand? I get them involved, and I paint a picture for them so that it's easier for them to understand what it does for them and not so much just what it is on a piece of paper. So then I go down to disability, and I explain that, and then I explain return of premium. So I show them option one and option A, or option one is always loaded up. It's everything on it, and I show that, and I tell them to, you know, again, if this is, I need you to tell me if this does not fit the budget, because there's things we need to do to change it. So I'll go through the script, and the script's on the site. You guys know what the script is, but I think it's important to understand and how to sell that value in each one of the benefits. And then if it doesn't fit the budget, I chop it down. I go to option B. One of the first questions I might ask right there, Brandon, is, Brandon, how big of a deal is return of premium to you? Right off the bat, sometimes you can say, I don't really care about that. It doesn't really matter. I don't want return of premium. If that's the case, then immediately can take off return of premium, probably cut the premiums down by 30, 40, 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll show them that. Now, if they kind of sit there and go, well, I'll stop them. Okay, here's what I would do. I find myself, they probably get tired of hearing me say, here's what I would do, but I say it 1,000 times, and I say, here's what I would do, and here's what a lot of homeowners do. You have to use the gregarious nature of people. We move with the herd. We don't like to be the only people that are doing it. We like to be in with everybody else. So if I say this is what a lot of people do, then it helps out a lot. And after everything, I'm always, does that make sense? I'm going to nod with me, but I do that a lot, Brandon. So here's what I would do, and this is where. This is the first time where I've kind of explained that critical period or the mortgage payment option to a person. You asked me earlier today how many critical period sales or how many mortgage payment option sales I made this week, and I said probably more than 50%. It doesn't mean that I'd sold a bunch of final expense $25,000 apps. It just meant that I explained that any time I lower a death benefit from the mortgage amount down, I always go through what, you know, that critical period concept, that mortgage payment option concept that we talk about. I always kind of go through that because I don't want to drop their death benefit down without explaining that and then have somebody go, well, why would you only give me $75,000 of death benefit when my mortgage is $100,000? That don't make sense. Because when somebody states their position like that, they tend to usually defend it. So I don't want them to make dumb statements, because then they have to defend dumb statements. And so I'll say, Brandon, you know, one other option we can do here is, and this is what I would do, is I would drop that death benefit down a little bit. Here's the reason why. Keep in mind, the definition of mortgage protection is not to pay off the loan. Is to keep Meredith from going into a foreclosure, right? So, Meredith, let me ask you this. If something were to happen to Brandon, again, he doesn't come home from work tomorrow, does RBC go to you and ask for $100,000? No, right? They don't want the payoff. They want the payment. So $75,000 may not pay the loan off. Now it may 15 years down the road, right? Because you owe less, and this is a level benefit. But let's say it doesn't. Like, are you? If I hand you a check for $75,000, are you going to lose the home? No. You got all kinds of options. You'd be surprised how many homeowners I sit in front of, Meredith, Brandon, that have $200,000 and $300,000 loans that sometimes walk away with, you know, $25,000, $30,000, $45,000, $50,000 of death benefit. It's not so much can we pay off the loan, it's how much time can we buy each other should something like that happen. And so I kind of go into a little bit of a critical period concept or mortgage payment option anytime I lower death benefit. Even if I'm sitting with somebody younger, I'll kind of mention that before I lower death benefit. Because that is a good way to chop costs down and keep return of premium and some of the other cool bells and whistles on there. So I may chop their death benefit down to $75,000, chop their critical illness from 100% maybe down to 50%, and then chop and then maybe show the premium. And then I may have to drop that death benefit down to $50,000, then $50,000 accidental, and then 25% critical illness, and keep the disability on there and show that. So that's kind of the way I chop my premiums down. I don't want to do it too much. I really want to maybe 2 to 3 options at the most is what I'm trying to show, because the last thing you want to do is that, well, you could do this, or you could do this, or you could do this, or you could do this, and then they do need to think about it because you just overwhelmed them with 50 different options.
Right.
I'm real careful about, like, when I get done with some, I almost like eliminate, like scratch it off. Okay, here's what I would do. Here's what I would do next. Not here's what you could do. It's here's what I would do. Here's what I would do. And then
eliminate an option.
If they're sitting there, like, what? Yeah, exactly. If they're sitting there, and maybe we've got 2 good options laid out. It's kind of a feel process, but there will come a point where you know you're close budget wise. And it's between option, you know, B and C, where you just need to shut up and not say anything else and quit talking, because you'll talk yourself out of most sales. You do that on the phone as well. Like when you don't like the silence. Like when you put somebody on the spot. Like I got 2 spots, 6 or 8, which is better? You get that silence. Just shut up. They're just as uncomfortable as you are, if not more. And so the first person that talks loses. I just, there's a certain point where in the presentation I just have to shut up. I've already explained everything. It's these 2 options. I know one of them fits in the budget. We're close, so which one it will be? Which one works for you guys best? Now, if I'm sitting with somebody, Brandon, I sit with somebody that's maybe 70, 65, 70 years old. Maybe they got some health problems. Then I do go into a little bit more right off the bat. I'll say, after I get the rapport and the emotion, I'll say, this is my job. This is what I do. Here's what I think. You guys got 2 options. One of them is going to be real expensive, and expensive is a relative term, meaning what's expensive to me may not be expensive to you guys. So if you want to see it, I'll show it to you, but it's probably going to be somewhere between $400 and $600 a month. That's called the mortgage payoff option. That's the one that pays your whole loan off. In other words, Brandon, if you die, Meredith, you get a check for $270,000. There's no time to beat around the bush here, guys, so I don't like to do that. You know, you're over 50 years old. There are some health complications. You know, we know what those are. You've told me about those. So that drives cost up for that mortgage payoff option, and that can get up there. So, you know, I'll show it to you, $400 to $600 a month. That works for you guys. Or, and a lot of times you can kind of read by body language what they're doing right there, Brandon.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time they don't, but occasionally, again, don't rule that out. Quit going into the home thinking about your budget. What is expensive to you may not be expensive to them. You know, Brandon, what's the biggest monthly premium you've ever picked up?
Lord, $1,300 a month.
Like, so don't be too scared. If they're healthy enough, you may be sitting with somebody that you can help them apply for something that would pay off a $200,000 amount or something, and maybe it's $500 or $600 a month. Maybe they'll go for it. But reading body language, if that don't sound like option number 2, Brandon, is very popular. A lot of homeowners do this. It's what they call critical period coverage or mortgage payment option. Let me explain what this does. And this is where I go into this concept. We have a script for it on the website, but I'm basically helping them to understand it's not about paying off the mortgage. It's about buying each other options and buying each other time to think and time to come up with a plan and time to sell the place and get the equity out of it. So I say, option number two is a lot. Have you guys mortgage critical period coverage? Have you ever heard of that, Brandon? Okay, so here's what it does. It covers you. It covers Meredith in this case. Can we have a policy number? It would cover Meredith during that critical period of time in which she is at most risk of losing the home. And that's that first, 1 to 2 year period after Brandon, you're gone, you're out of the picture, where Meredith is trying to cope with not only the loss emotionally, but the loss financially. And, Meredith, they don't call you up, like RBC don't call you up and say, Meredith, we're sorry about your loss. We heard about Brandon. We're sorry. We're going to give you a year's worth of mortgage payment. We're just going to give that, we're going to take that off. So for the next year, Meredith, you're not going to have to make a mortgage payment. They don't do that, do they? And they shake their head no. It'd be nice if they did, right? Yeah, and they shake their head yes. Okay, so that's what this protection is going to do. We're going to try to cover you guys during that critical period of time because, remember, they don't want the pay off. They want the payment. So what if we could buy each other a year's worth of mortgage payments? What would that give you guys the ability to do? Like, this house is brand new. This house, you got a $140,000 loan, right? Is this house worth more than $140,000? And they always take pride in that because it always is. People love their equity. It's worth $200,000. So let me ask you this. Meredith, if you can't make the mortgage payment, whose equity is it? It's the bank's, right? So let's protect the equity. Like, heaven forbid you got to sell the place. Maybe you don't want to do that, but if you can't make the mortgage payment, then maybe we have to do that. Maybe you want to sell the place, take the equity out of it, and move somewhere different, cheaper, whatever. Like, in case you guys haven't noticed, things aren't flying off the market these days. So let's give ourselves time to sell the place for what it's worth and get the equity out of it versus making a decision to sell it for a lot cheaper and not getting the equity out of it, or worse yet, letting the bank take it from us. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense to you guys? And I'll say that to them. Does that make sense to you guys? It's kind of like if we were on the Titanic and the Titanic was going down and all the lifeboats were full of women and children. If I threw you guys one of those little round floaty things, would you grab hold of it? Or would you just try to tread around in that cold water until safety got there? Right? So this may not be the lifeboat, but it's a pretty good life vest, and it's very popular. So does that make sense to you guys? Because if it don't, then I'm going to go back to option number one.
I love that, Casey, because, again, what you're talking about is buying time to grieve properly. You don't want your spouse worried about the mortgage payment at the funeral.
Right? Exactly. Yep.
Time to make a plan and then see. Time to protect the equity. And that's the biggest thing, is we're letting the equity become the death benefit.
Yeah, you pull the 80. I sold one yesterday for 120 or 130 a month. It was, and the benefit there was that he had 120,000 equity in the home. Wife wasn't going to be able to keep the home, never be able to come up with a mortgage payment. So we take the 120 out, and there's your death benefit.
Yeah, and you got to explain that the right way and get them emotionally involved on that, and it really seems to make sense to them. It's like, even if you have somebody that has $100,000 of life insurance, but they have $100,000, or a $200,000 mortgage or whatever the case is, it's like, the life insurance was taken out 10, 15, 30 years ago, whenever it was, for a specific reason. This is something completely different, and that's our job, too, is to let them see that and understand that. You don't want to have to burn through $100,000 making mortgage payments and doing all that. What if you had a chance to have your mortgage, your note paid for a year, for two years, for 3 years? Protect the equity. Then you've got a $100,000 death benefit, and you've got $100,000 of life insurance of equity, rather.
Of equity, yep.
And then, hey, go get you a smaller place. Have a paid-for place.
And I can't tell you how many sales I've made, Brandon. how many sales I've made like this. Just selling that value.
People have
got to get somebody, sitting with somebody that's 79 years old that's got a $250,000 mortgage and walk out of there with a $15,000 final expense app with American Amicable Platinum Choice for $180 a month. And they get issued, and they get issued quick.
In like 2 days.
And, yeah, and you can miss a couple of them because the premiums are always more. Like, well, I don't like old people because, you know, my close ratio is not as good. Well, you know, it's a lot better than having to pick up every single $50 app you sit on.
Well, it's
like if my average premium's $2,000, you know, I can miss a couple, and you know, I don't need to sell all of them.
Well, and the thing is,
it's not going to make sense to everybody.
No, the thing with this concept is that it doesn't have to be the 75-year-old person. It doesn't have to be the person that had cancer.
Not the explainer, right? It can be anybody. I mean, I've sat in front of 35-year-olds that it made sense to, and they couldn't afford a bunch, so that's what I did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, what percentage do you say? Give me a percentage. I mean, for me,
what percentage do I go into that, to go into explaining the
overall? Yeah, what percentage of your sales, the apps that you take, are coming from a final expense application on a mortgage lead?
I would say a final expense application?
It doesn't have to be final expense. I'm sorry, it doesn't have to be final expense because this concept can be just a lower term amount, right? So how many did you say, 30 or 40%?
Oh, yeah, just a lower term amount, probably 70%.
Because it's the same concept, right?
Yep.
And one of the things that I hear from new agents more than anything is, you know, it was too expensive. It's too expensive. Well, guys, our job is that we have to make it affordable for them. And we can't do that unless we're good salespeople and let them teach them to understand how important something is over nothing.
And getting good too, Brandon, there comes a point in all of these sales where, again, it comes back to, is it viable? Because, look, and getting good at putting people, just making statements like this in the home, like the way I see it, guys, is we either sacrifice now or sacrifice later. And if we sacrifice now, as you guys know, it usually costs a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
So we can either sacrifice a little bit now in the way of a premium or sacrifice a lot more later in the equity that's in the home and the frustration and the just the. So you kind of got to say things like that to people, like, would it be easier for you guys to come up with $80 a month right now together, healthy, working, or $1,500 a month mortgage payment with one income?
Hmm.
Like if you guys are saying that like 80 would be tight, I'm not afraid to say things in the home too. Brandon, there was a sale last week where the guy was smoking cigarettes, and I said, Mike, how much does cigarettes costing you? I mean, we're sitting here talking about $60 a month. How many packs a day you smoke?
Mm.
You got the cable TV in there. How much that cable costing you? Like, let's get down to priorities and figure out what is actually important, because we protect our things with insurance. We protect our assets. And this is the most valuable asset you have, which is your ability to produce income.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are dead, you can't produce income. If you're disabled, you can't produce income. If you're critically ill, you can't produce income. This is the most important asset you have. So it's important to kind of get bold enough. And again, I have enough appointments in my schedule to where I can say things like that. If I only have two, I'm afraid to say things like that. And I don't, and then I don't get any sales. So, and I'm big on activity will give you the right posture. But another thing I wanted to mention, Brandon, again, I don't know if you have any more questions, and I know we're running a little bit over, but this is going to be a recording, so we want to put this on the website. What about, I think wrapping up the sale is important. Like, the business is only good if it stays on the books. So I'm real big about, like, taking an application. There's four or five things I always do before I leave the home. One of them is when I'm wrapping a sale up, did you guys send any more of these notices in? Nope, we only sent one. Are you sure? Yep, we only sent one. Okay, you're going to get a bunch more. And I usually have four or five of them because I have my leads with me, and I'll say, they all look different. Most of them are from my company. There's a couple that aren't. But the ones that aren't usually talk about, like, just accidental death and stuff. Like, don't fill out any more of these, because if you do, guess where it's going to end up? And I get them to answer that question. Get up on my desk, and I'm going to call you. I'm going to yell at you. So don't send any more of these in. Now, if anybody does call you, what are you going to tell them? Who helped you? See if they remember my name. I want them to remember my name. I put my card in their hands, and I put a card on their fridge. But I locked down that because other companies, I mean, there's other marketing companies that market for mortgage protection and life insurance. So I want to make sure they don't send anything else in. Another thing I say is that, you know, depending on whether I'm delivering or if the policy is going to them, I say, as soon as you get that policy, I want you to call me. That's if I can't deliver it. Delivering is always the best way.
Mm-hmm.
So deliver that policy. Get back in front of them again. That's a good spot to go for referrals. But there is those things I do, Brandon. And sometimes, too, like if I don't feel 100%, like if it's a little bit, like I had to push a little bit to get the sale, and don't do that. I usually try to talk them into spending less money if it feels shaky. But if for some reason it's a little bit, I'll slide that check in front of them in that app, and I'll say, guys, if you're going to call me in 2 days or in 2 weeks or in 2 years and cancel this, I want you to hang on to the check and I'll rip the application up. Okay, because this coverage is only good if you keep it. And it does. It scared, the first time I ever did that scared me to death because I thought they were going to keep it, but they never do. But it kind of closes that door real hard. Like, but if you felt like I did a good job for you and it fits the budget and it fits the needs, like I told you we were going to try to accomplish today, then I'm going to put the application in and we're going to give it 2 to 3 weeks and we're going to see what they say. I think we got a good shot at getting it, but please, 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 another thing is don't get mad at me if they say no. Just let me come back out here. Like I said, we represent a bunch of different insurance companies. I'll find you a different one. This is the one I like right now, but if for some reason option A don't work, we'll move to option B, okay? Oh, no, we would never get mad at you. So it kind of, those are a few things I think you need to do when you leave the home every single time.
Yep, I agree. Looking over my emails. Make sure I haven't missed any questions.
You probably got a good think about it in there.
Yeah, you know, most of the questions I'm getting are, again, it's you know, price-wise, how are you selling higher premiums? How are you, you know, what if their budget is this? How are you selling above it? Listen, if their budget is $50, I don't want to sell them something for $100. So if their budget is $50, that's why I build the emotion and, you know, help them understand what they can get for $50 and why that's good. And Casey, one of the things that I have to do a lot of times is even though they're on a 30-year mortgage, maybe we look at 20 years of coverage, 15 years of coverage, even 10 years of coverage if we have to. You know, get them, especially parents that have kids that are, you know, 10 years old, or, you know, you can really use that with emotion and say, listen, let's get the next 15 years of protection so if something happens, at least the kids are grown and gone and the expenses are gone there. And then when you guys are in a better position financially, maybe it's later this year, maybe it's next year, give me a call back. We'll, you know, we'll put you in something for 20 years or 30 at that point. But
I think just, you know, bigger, as far as how to pick up a bigger average premium, average check, I think, you know, the better you get it selling, get the emotion on the table, but also selling the value and what it does and the value of having it and getting good at saying, like, especially with final expense, like with whole life, if you're on a more a sale where you're switched over to some sort of a permanent protection like a whole life, I make that point. Like, this is not like one of those temporary coverages where in 10 years it ends.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if the premium is $180 a month, how long would you have to put that $180 a month into a savings account to where you'd have $25,000? I did that yesterday and almost turned it into, like, it was a critical period concept, but it was also a almost like a good investment for them. And they were like, yeah, it would take me 20 years to pay in this money to where I'd even just get to the 25,000 mark. So if I die, and they were like, you know, 65 or whatever, if I die, then, and you die in 2 years, like, so it's, there's a couple ways to sacrifice. You can either start saving money, but that's called dollar-for-dollar savings, meaning, Jack, if you save $1,200 this year, you're putting in $100 a month, you save $1,200, and something happens to you, Mary, how much money do you have? Well, I have $1,200. Okay, Jack, if you save $5,000 and something happens to you, Mary, how much money you got? I got $5,000. What if I showed you a way to put $100 a month into this policy, and then if something happens day one, it turns into $25? And they start to kind of, things will start to roll around their head, and you've got your calculator out there, you can start messing around with the numbers, and it always shows, I mean, it's, there's very, very little risk in a permanent type policy like that. The only risk is what if I could have taken that money and invested it over a year period and made more? Well, you know, but they understand that. They don't do that. Where can I find a 5.5, 6, 7% interest rate that would give me a double my money every 10 years, you know? They don't. That's not out there. They understand that, and they would have been saving that money in the first place. So you almost kind of, with some of that final expense stuff, you can start to kind of talk about it on the investment side of things too. And sometimes when you put it in the form of like, well, I could, like, what if I asked you, Brandon, could you guys, if I told you right now to start saving $180 a month for this rainy day, could you do it? Mm-hmm. Because everything's relative. Like, for some reason, somebody can save $200 a month, but a policy that costs $60, it is like, it's, for some reason, it's like, that's a lot of money. What's not, it's just, it's all about what you feel as a priority. Like, cable is $80 a month. So it's not that you don't have the money. It's just talking about it in a way that maybe gets them to think about it in a different light. And that's why sometimes I'll compare it to not an investment, but if you put it side by side next to a savings account, then they start to kind of think like that, and sometimes it'll free up a little bit extra money. The trick is, before you leave the home, say, now remember, this makes sense today, but in 2 years from now, when you see this $180 coming out of your account, I want you to remember that. It's just almost like, imagine it coming from from your checking account going into a savings that at any given point is going to pay you 25 cents. Not a savings account, I'm not saying that, but just remember that. Remember why you did this. And I lock it down, because sometimes you get good enough in the home where you're selling the value. You need to make a statement like that so they understand that it makes sense now. Just remember, 2 years from now, that shouldn't change.
Yeah.
Kind of close that sale a little bit harder.
Yeah, like, because they think, you know, if you get the guy that says, well, I just would rather put this money in the bank, and which obviously doesn't make any sense at all, but I would like to say things like, well, you know, listen, Jack, if we knew when we were going to die, we'd take this out the day before. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way.
I love that. I said that the other day to somebody on the phone. They got a little ticked at it, but it felt good. They said it. I always try to leave the phone call with your chin up, right? He said, well, I don't go, just wait on it. I said, I'll tell you what. Why don't you, I got your date of birth here, 5/5/1942. Tell you what, just give me your date of death, and I'll just call you back like 3 days beforehand, and we'll go ahead and do it up then. He's like, no. I was like, well, just give me your date, just what's your date of death? Well, I don't know. I said, you don't. He got upset by that, but it was funny, and I've said that in homes before and got a chuckle out of somebody and made a move on it, you know. So you just got to be bold enough to, symbol full of boldness is what they call that sometimes, Brandon.
It'll go a long way. I want to remind everybody about a call that is on the website, too, that I've gotten a lot of questions that we've kind of run out of time. But, guys, listen, for some of you that are working bonus leads, go back and listen if you haven't already. If you have, listen to it again, the Working Older Leads MP3 or CD. It's just right there on the website. You can bring it to a disc. You can drive around and listen to it. For those of you working bonus leads, that thing is golden. Okay, because one of the questions I got earlier, Casey, was, well, what if I'm calling somebody and I said, yeah, I sent that thing in a year ago, we've already got it taken care of. Well, listen to that CD, okay?
Yeah.
It tells you how to do all of that. That's why, you know, looking at the ING or the Mutual of Omaha, the fully underwritten stuff, if you have to go out and replace something that was written by another company and give them better value, if you can, a lot of times you can't, but there's an option there, a lot of options.
Yeah.
So, Casey, I think it was good stuff, man. I love the critical period concept. I think with people, hopefully we'll get back on the website, listen to this again and again and again, and get the scripts out, because, guys, if you don't understand how to do this with a critical period concept, you're missing out on, I would say, as much as 50%, maybe more, of the business that you could be writing. Okay? So just the way the market is today, buddy, people that are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, that they still need coverage. And guess what? Most people aren't helping them. So...
Yep.
Not as crowded a market, for sure. So
yep, absolutely.
Good stuff, buddy. Great stuff, man. $30,000.
Well, thanks for asking me questions, man. I appreciate the opportunity.